Global Investment Outlook, Uncharted Terrain, Today's Global Market Drivers, date recorded June 6, 2017. Featuring Ed Perk, CFA, Chris Malumphy, CFA, Michael Hasenstab, PhD, and Stephen Dover, CFA.
Chris, we've started to see the Fed move up the path of normalization, but some might argue that it's taking longer than expected. What's driving this, and do you see a shift in the pace of policy going forward?
Well, certainly taking longer than expected and longer than the Fed has operated historically. If we think back to the last tightening cycle, and admittedly it was over a decade ago, but during that cycle, the Fed moved from 1% to over 5%, so a 4-plus percentage point move in roughly 2 years, hiking at virtually every meeting. And then we look at today's tightening cycle, and the Fed started moving rates up a year and a half ago, and we're less than 1 percentage point higher. So it's a considerably different situation. A couple things are different. Well, one is just the pace of growth. I mean, we've been growing at roughly 2 percentage points per year in the U.S. for the majority of this cycle, and we're coming up on 8 years into the growth cycle, and that's certainly different than in the past. The other difference is inflation. Inflation's been very slow to pick up, even with unemployment at currently 4.3%. Inflation's running pretty low, with both core metrics showing inflation sub 2%. The Fed's telling us, you know, to expect roughly 3 tightenings per year over the next several years, and the market's saying, well, we're not so sure about that. You know, we're only thinking, you know, one, maybe a second one for the remainder of this year. But as we look forward, the market's telling us they think there's only one additional 25 basis point tightening in 2018 and again in 2019. So a pretty good divergence there.
From an investor's point of view then, Chris, what implications might there be from this rate environment for U.S. fixed income sectors?
With the 10-year Treasury remaining very low on a historical basis, and what has happened is that rate-sensitive sectors have performed pretty well, and with this search for yield, not only in the U.S., but globally, it has really driven risk-on sectors, credit sectors of various types, higher and higher over the past couple of years. We've seen a rally in corporates, including high yield, including leveraged loans, a rally in emerging market debt, so really a risk-on market over the past couple of years. Now, as we look forward, should rates remain, you know, reasonably low, you could well see that continue, at least over the near to intermediate term. You know, we hear a lot about sectors like the corporate market being set up for a correction and maybe being overvalued. And that may be the case, but again, using high-yield corporates as an example, you know, fundamentals remain pretty robust. And if we look at past cycles, corporate sectors, spread sectors in general have remained reasonably strong as the economy continues to grow. You know, if economy holds in, which we think so, fundamentals should hold in, and valuations could remain at relatively rich levels with this search for yield globally.
Michael, thinking globally, what central bank policy shifts might we expect to see from developed markets outside of the United States?
Well, I think, you know, it is interesting. What was an unprecedented experiment in terms of money printing has now become fairly normal throughout most of the developed world. I was just in Japan last week, and they have faced very different problems than in the U.S. You know, the U.S. market or the economy has begun to normalize. Japan is nowhere close to that. They can't reach their inflation target. You know, growth is really still anemic. They've thrown all they can in terms of monetary policy at the economy. It hasn't fully got them out of this trap that they've been in for decades. So probably the next shift, and I think this is actually going to be a shift more globally, both in the U.S. as well as Europe, is a shift to fiscal policy. So while we've seen incredibly accommodative monetary policy, hasn't got the results that some politicians would like, I think the next move is to go to very aggressive fiscal policy. And likely in Japan, they're going to, despite their huge deficits, pursue that. I think in Europe, you know, what held the Eurozone together was some sort of fiscal discipline and fiscal rules. I think the populist movements in Europe would like to throw those out, and we will see more aggressive fiscal policy to complement monetary policy that's already pretty accommodative. And in the U.S., we're already talking about, you know, expansive fiscal policy. So, it's a pretty dangerous recipe when you have very aggressive monetary policy and throw on top of that very aggressive fiscal policy. So, you know, we've gone from unprecedented to now double that. So I think we need to be cognizant that we're in uncharted territories here.
Stephen, thinking about equities, what opportunities and risks are you seeing across developed markets?
Well, it's a pretty benign, positive environment for equities right now that we haven't seen in a long time. In the United States, well, globally, we see GDP growing. We see profit of companies growing for the first time. We really see these green shoots in Europe, where there's a lot of opportunity there. We continue to see growth. All the concerns that we had about Chinese growth doesn't seem to be as much a problem as we saw last year. So all the news that's coming in seems to be quite positive for equities, particularly even outside of the United States. So what's the concern? Well, first of all, what Michael just said, probably if there is a lot of fiscal stimulus, which certainly after the U.S. election was one of the reasons the market improved, that's probably positive for equities in the short term, but could be quite negative for equities over a longer period of time.
Volatility has been subdued in recent quarters across both equities and fixed income. Ed, what's your view on market volatility going forward, and how do you see it potentially impacting returns?
Maybe I've had enough of hearing about the VIX, the volatility index, and the fact that it's dropped to below 10 and hits record lows on nearly a daily basis. We have to put that in perspective. That is a very short-term gauge of the market's expectations for volatility in the equity market, 30-day look, actually. What I think stands out to me a bit more is just how broad-based the decline in volatility has been across asset classes. So within equities, looking at U.S. equities, European equities, Asian equities, emerging market equities, all of these markets, particularly this last six-month period, are now realizing volatility that is either in or very close to the lowest decile of the prior 10-year experience. Shifting over to fixed income, it wasn't that long ago that we actually saw some volatility. Maybe you have to go back to the end of 2015, early 2016 to see it in credit, particularly in the U.S., from the middle of 2016 to the election and through where the 10-year rose substantially. We had some volatility. Now, that as well has really started to decline. So in treasuries across the U.S. as well as sovereign bonds globally, across corporates, U.S., Europe, high-yield markets across the globe, we also are seeing very low levels of realized volatility this last 6 months. Markets have gotten through some pretty significant points of uncertainty, if you will, the last several years. China and the experience, the commodity impact at the same time that was impacting markets, move through, whether it be Brexit or the U.S. election. More recently, even some potential hotspots around the world in terms of geopolitical or military conflicts, and the markets have really been able to get through it. In addition to this monetary accommodation that markets have had, we now have a concerted effort with policy to support economic growth. And while that certainly may have some implications down the road, right now, one of the things I think it's broadly doing for markets is really reducing the recession likelihood or probability. And that's something that also, you know, effectively drives down volatility in markets. And unfortunately, low volatility is not that predictive for us in terms of where we might be going forward. As we get later in the economic expansions or later in the business cycle, I think pressures will exist that could lead us to a more normal or elevated period of volatility. So those are the risks that I think our investment teams really need to be focused on. And certainly, I think investors need to be mindful that valuations are generally supported by periods of low volatility. So looking at markets today as a starting point, I think it's reasonable to have expectations of slightly lower returns going forward in many asset classes.
Stephen, what do you see as some of the most interesting investment themes in emerging markets, thinking about near-term or medium-term volatility and also what risks we might see?
Well, emerging markets are volatile. That's just the story of emerging markets, and they have been and they will be. And that's really the reason we see a lot of opportunity in emerging markets. The question is, can you get paid on a risk-adjusted basis for that volatility? So certainly recently we've seen volatility in Qatar and in Brazil. And one of the things, having now many years of experience in emerging markets, that amazes me is how prepared businesses are in emerging markets for volatility. And that's why we think it's so important to be on the ground and really look at the businesses themselves and see how they can face the volatility in their countries. So, Michael and I have had this discussion for a long time about being pretty optimistic on emerging markets this past year. There's a lot of reasons. I think that what Mike Michael has discussed in terms of the currencies and just that sort of underlying undervaluation gives a cushion. But on the equity side, what we've really seen more recently is a turnaround in GDP growth in most of these countries, again, with some notable exceptions, followed by profit growth. If you will, that's why emerging markets have underperformed more recently, but over the long term, they had performed. And as we see that increase in corporate profit growth, we think that there's an opportunity for a real catch-up with the developed markets, which certainly has been the case year to date. The other point we've made on emerging markets is that you can't really look at the historical index. You really have to look at what constitutes these countries and the companies now. They used to be much more dependent on exporting, much more dependent on commodities. Now they're much more dependent on consumption and much more, there are many opportunities on the technology side. You know, and once again, just like Michael talked about, if you look at the indexes, most indexes in emerging markets are heavily overweight on government-controlled companies and on export companies and commodity companies, where we see a lot of opportunities in the more consumer-driven and technology companies.
So let's shift our focus to emerging markets. Michael, you've remained fairly optimistic on select emerging markets over the last year, and we've certainly seen a nice rebound in the asset class. Going forward, you think that emerging markets will maintain their strong run, and what risks should investors be mindful of?
Local currency emerging markets have been one of the most unloved asset classes for the last 3 years. And you mentioned there's been a bit of a rebound, but it's only very recent. In fact, most capital exited those markets for the last couple of years on the fears that a Fed rate hike would trigger an exodus, and so the capital left before that even occurred. It created incredible valuation opportunities. We saw levels in local currency markets that we haven't seen since the GFC, since the Asian financial crisis, or in Mexico since the tequila crisis in the mid-90s, really unprecedented levels. The question then is, are the fundamentals actually worse than they were during those periods? And we spent a good part of a couple of years going out to those countries to identify, is the market right, or, you know, is the market wrong? And I would say in some cases, the market was right. There are some emerging markets, places like Venezuela, places like Turkey, that are incredibly vulnerable. And we like to be contrarian, but we're not going to be contrarian for the sake of being contrarian. And we've stayed away from a number of them. The other side is there are places like India, Indonesia, Brazil, Argentina, Colombia, which are either in the midst of a huge turnaround from populist to orthodox policy that present great opportunities with good valuations that are starting to be realized but still have a long way to go. So with a rifle shot approach, I think there are opportunities and we have to be very selective, even if it means being a bit more concentrated. So an exciting area, good value opportunities, but it has to be very selective.
So it sounds like there's a lot of potential and very interesting investment opportunities across equities and fixed income. Ed, from a multi-asset class perspective, how should one think about asset allocation? Are there trends in asset correlations or relative valuations that investors should consider?
One of the things that we are seeing is that the dispersion, both across different markets within the same asset class, the dispersion within given sectors of an asset class, which have been fairly low, do show some signs of starting to rise. On the flip side, the correlations that have been so high these last 5 years across asset classes, within asset classes, they are showing a tendency to start to fall. Mm-hmm. And we think that, you know, now reflecting back on those 5 years may have been very supportive for passive investing. You know, we think active investing will be critical to now playing in this go-forward market and navigating those uncertainties that we know will exist. As I think across the asset classes, equities in particular, as Stephen touched on, you know, we've seen tremendous performance in U.S. equities. You know, when we look more broadly around the globe today with an improving fundamental outlook, a relative valuation benefit, you know, potentially existing, it's not that we're not finding opportunities in the U.S., but it's a broadening opportunity set. And I think that's something that is very relevant for asset allocation today for many clients. Now, as you know, we see the broader fixed income markets adjust to potentially higher interest rates over time, that opportunity set may also broaden for us. May not be the case today, but going forward, certainly, I think, can be more relevant. You know, as I think back on the last 5 years in particular, Michael mentioned the post-financial crisis trade that existed and maybe supported a lot of different asset classes. And, you know, we largely feel like that trade is done.
This material is intended to be of general interest only and should not be construed as individual investment advice or a recommendation or solicitation to buy, sell, or hold any security or to adopt any investment strategy. It does not constitute legal or tax advice. The views expressed are those of the investment manager, and comments, opinions, and analysis are rendered as at publication date and may change without notice. The information provided in this material is not intended as a complete analysis of every material fact regarding any country, region, or market. All investments involve risks, including possible loss of principal. Data from third-party sources may have been used in the preparation of this material, and Franklin Templeton Investments, FTI, has not independently verified, validated, or audited such data. FTI accepts no liability whatsoever for any loss arising from use of this information, and reliance upon the comments, opinions, and analysis in the material is at the sole discretion of the user. Products, services, and information may not be available in all jurisdictions and are offered outside the U.S. by other FTI affiliates and/or their distributors as local laws and regulation permits. Please consult your own professional advisor for further information on availability of products and services in your jurisdiction. Issued in the U.S. by Franklin Templeton Distributors, Inc., 1 Franklin Parkway, San Mateo, California, 94403, 800-DIAL-BEN-342-5236. FranklinTempleton.com. Franklin Templeton Distributors, Inc. is the principal distributor of Franklin Templeton Investments U.S. registered products, which are available only in jurisdictions where an offer or solicitation of such products is permitted under applicable laws and regulation. Investments are not FDIC insured, may lose value, and are not bank guaranteed. Distribution outside the U.S. may be made by Templeton Global Advisors Limited or other sub-distributors, intermediaries, dealers, or professional investors that have been engaged by Templeton Global Advisors Limited to distribute shares of Franklin Templeton funds in certain jurisdictions. This is not an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to purchase securities in any jurisdiction where it would be illegal to do so. Please visit franklinresources.com to be directed to your local Franklin Templeton website. Copyright 2017 Franklin Templeton Investments. All rights reserved.